Discerning Hearts presents The Ascent of Mount Carmel by St. John of the Cross, translated by David Lewis and read by Ed Humpel. Book 1, Chapter 7. The Desires Torment the Soul. Proofs and Illustrations.
The second positive evil which the desires inflict is a certain torment and affliction of soul, so that he who suffers therefrom is like one in torture, bound with chains, finding no rest until released. The cords of my sins, that is, my desires, saith the psalmist, have encompassed me. As a man who lies naked amid thorns and briars, so is the soul in the power of its desires. For they pierce, torture, and tear it painfully, as it is written, they surrounded me like bees, and they burned like fire among thorns. The desires, which are as thorns, increase the fire of affliction and trouble. As the husbandman, greedy of the harvest, goads the oxen at the plow, so concupiscence goads the soul harnessed to its desires, till it shall obtain its will. Such was the desire of Delilah to know the secret of the strength of Samson. She pressed him, giving him no time to rest, so that his soul fainted away and was wearied even unto death. The desire tortures the soul in proportion to its intensity, so that the pain equals the desires, and the more numerous the desires, the greater the pain. For the words which the apostle heard are fulfilled even in this life. As much as she hath glorified herself, and lived in delicacies, so much torment and sorrow give ye to her. As he is tormented who falls into the hands of his enemies, so is the soul carried away by its desires. This truth is foreshadowed in the history of Samson, who was once so strong and free, the judge of Israel. But when he had fallen into the hands of his enemies, they robbed him of his great strength, plucked out his eyes, imprisoned him in a mill, and made him grind, torturing and afflicting him. So it is with the soul, whose enemies, its own desires, live and triumph. Their first act is to weaken and blind the soul, then to torment it, imprisoning it in the mill of concupiscence, and the cords that bind it are its own desires themselves. God, therefore, compassionating those who, with so much toil and cost, go about to satisfy the hunger and thirst of their desires in creative things, thus speaks to them by the mouth of his prophet, "All you that thirst and desire, come to the waters, and you that have no money, self-will, make haste, buy and eat, come, buy wine and milk, peace and spiritual sweetness, without money, of self-will, and without price, without that labor which your desires demand. Why do you spend money, of self-will, for that which is not bread, that is, the Spirit of God, and the labor of your desires, for that which doth not satisfy you? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat that which is good, and which you desire, and your soul shall be delighted in fatness." We attain to this fatness when we abandon all created satisfactions, for pain and sorrow flow from the creature, and refreshment from the Spirit of God. "Come to me, saith our Lord, all you that labor and are burdened, and I will refresh you. All you who are tormented and afflicted, laboring beneath the burden of anxiety and desire, cast it aside by coming unto me, and I will refresh you. And your souls shall find that rest of which your desires rob you, for they, as a heavy burden, are become heavy upon me."
Book 1, Chapter 8. The Desires Darken the Soul. Proofs and illustrations.
The third evil which the desires inflict is darkness and blindness of soul. For as vapors darken the air and hide the light of the sun, or as a stained mirror cannot clearly receive an image, or as muddy water cannot distinctly reflect his face who looks into it, so the soul, stained by its desires, is intellectually blind, so that neither the understanding itself, nor the sun of natural reason, nor that of the supernatural wisdom of God, can inform and enlighten it. To this the psalmist referred, when he said, "My iniquities have overtaken me, and I was not able to see." And thus, while the soul is intellectually blind, the will becomes torpid, the memory fails, and every lawful function is disordered. These faculties depend on the intellect, and it is therefore clear that, when the intellect is embarrassed, they must all be thrown into confusion and disorder. "My soul," saith the psalmist, "is troubled exceedingly." That is, all my faculties are in disorder. For, as I have said, the intellect in this state cannot receive the illumination of the divine wisdom, just as the obscured air cannot reflect the brightness of the sun. The will cannot embrace God in pure love, just as the stained mirror cannot represent an object placed before it. The memory overclouded by desires cannot calmly dwell on the image of God, just as muddy water cannot reflect the face of him who looks into it. The desire also blinds and darkens the soul, for the desire as such is blind and unreasonable, and reason is that which ever guides the soul aright in its several acts. Hence it is that the soul becomes blind whenever the desires guide it, because it is as one who saw were led by one who saw not, the result being the same as if both were blind. This is what our Lord referred to when he said, "If the blind lead the blind, both fall into the pit." Eyes are of little service to the moth, whose desire for the beauty of the light leads it dazzled into the midst of the flame. He who gives the rein to his desires may be likened to the fish dazzled by the light which the fishermen flow over the water, that the nets may not be seen. In this case, light serves but to increase the obscurity. This is the meaning of the psalmist when he says, "Fire hath fallen upon them, and they have not seen the sun." For the desire is like fire, warming with its heat and dazzling with its light, and the effect of the desire in the soul is that it enkindles concupiscence and dazzles the intellect so that it cannot see. The cause of this dazzling obscurity is the interposition of another light between the object and the eye, whereon the eye rests, so as to see nothing beyond. Thus the desire comes so close to the soul, and within the range of its vision, that we are dazzled and satisfied with the light it gives, so that it hides from us the clear light of the intellect, which we do not, and never shall see, until the glare of the desire shall have ceased. This renders so deplorable their case, who burden themselves with indiscreet penances, and other imprudent methods of devotion, voluntary, certainly, on which they rely, thinking such alone, without mortifying their desires in other matters, to be sufficient to lead them on to the union of the divine wisdom. But this can never be, if the desires be not diligently mortified. If these persons bestowed but half their labor on this, they would make greater progress in a month than they can now make in many years, if they persevere in their present ways. As it is necessary to till the earth that it may bring forth fruit, for otherwise nothing will grow therein but weeds, so also it is necessary to mortify our desires if we are to make progress towards perfection. Without mortification, I say it boldly, we shall make no progress whatever in the knowledge of God and of ourselves, notwithstanding all our efforts, any more than the seed will grow which is thrown away on uncultivated ground. Neither can the darkness and ignorance of our souls be removed, if the desires are not extinguished. For they are like a mote or cataract in the natural eye, obstructing the vision, until it be taken away. The psalmist, considering the blindness of those souls which are under the power of their desires, the impossibility of their clearly beholding the truth, and the greatness of God's anger with them, said, "Before your thorns could know the briar, he swalloweth them up as alive in his wrath." Before your thorns, your desires, harden and grow into a thicket, shutting out the sight of God, as the thread of life is frequently broken in the midst thereof, so will God swallow them up in his anger. Those persons in whom their desires live and hinder the knowledge of God, God will swallow up in his wrath, either in the next life, in the purifying pains of purgatory, or in this, in afflictions and sufferings, sent to detach them from their desires, or in the mortification of those desires voluntarily undergone. God doeth this to take away the false light of desire between himself and us, which dazzles us and hinders us from knowing him, and that, the intellect becoming clear, the ravage of desire may be repaired. Oh, that men knew how great a blessing, that of the divine light, this their blindness, the result of their desires, robs them of, and how great the evils they daily fall into, because they do not mortify them. We are not to rely on a clear intellect, or on the gifts received from God, and then imagine that any affections or desires we may indulge in will not blind us, nor cause us to fall into a worse state, little by little. Who would have thought that a man of perfect wisdom, filled with the gifts of God, as Solomon was, could have fallen away in his old age into such blindness and torpor of the will as to build altars to idols and worship them? His affection for his wives, and his negligence in controlling his desires and the satisfactions of his heart, were alone sufficient to reduce him to this. So he tells us himself, saying, "Whatsoever my eyes desired, I refused them not, and I withheld not my heart from enjoying every pleasure." Such was the effect upon Solomon of unbridled desires, and their gratification, though at first he was cautious. They soon blinded his understanding, and at last put out the light of wisdom within him, so that in his old age he forsook God. And if unmortified desires could produce such a disaster in the case of Solomon, who knew so well the difference between good and evil, what shall they not produce in us who are so ignorant? We are like the people of Nineveh, of whom God said, "They know not how to distinguish between their right hand and their left, since at every step we take good for evil and evil for good, and this is as it were natural to us." What then must it be when our desires are added to our natural blindness, but that which the prophet bewailed, speaking of those who love to follow after their desires? "We have groped for the wall, and like the blind, we have groped as if we had no eyes, we have stumbled at noon, as if in the darkness." Such is he who is blinded by his desires, for in the presence of the truth and his real interests, he cannot see them any more than if he had been utterly blind.